is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Pat Baldwin, head men's basketball coach at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering new subscribers 10% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code SAVE10 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its play bank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. This episode is brought to you by the Ready State Virtual Mobility Coach. Dr. Starrett is a movement and mobility coach for players in the NFL, MLB, NHL, and NBA, plus a doctor of physical therapy. Kelly has created a program called Virtual Mobility Coach. Every day, Virtual Mobility Coach gives you guided mobility videos. It walks you step by step through Kelly's proven techniques to relieve pain, improve range of motion, and improve performance. Try it completely free for 2 weeks, and if you decide to continue, you can get 10% off for life using promo code HOOPHEADS10. Visit thereadystate.com/hoopheads and use code HOOPHEADS10 at checkout. Again, that's thereadystate.com/hoopheads and use code HOOPHEADS10 when you sign up to get 10% off for the life of your membership after your 14-day free trial ends.
I know a lot of kids who train like the champ and get in the game and that defense moves, it's not a cone, and they don't know how to react. Then I know some kids who compete at a level 10, but then their skill set is deficient. So when it's in a tight situation, they don't have skills to make a play, but they compete like a dog. And then what is it going to take for you to really stand out to a college coach? I've never seen a college coach go look at a scorebook after a game. Never.
Chris Meadows is the co-author of IMD1, How to Conquer the World of Travel Basketball. His mission is to empower the world of rising basketball players and their families by sharing the keys of the D1 mindset. Chris is the founder of Momentum Skills Academy in Charlotte, North Carolina. And as a player development consultant and trainer, Chris has worked with programs from the ACC, Big East, SEC, Atlantic 10, MAC, Pac-12, and Mountain West conferences. Meadows was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona, where Chris was named to the Street and Smith Honorable Mention High School All-American team. He was also named the best ball handler while attending the Blue Chip All-American basketball camp. As a student athlete, he started his college journey in his hometown of Phoenix, Arizona, at South Mountain Community College. He later accepted a basketball scholarship to attend St. Bonaventure University, where he played point guard. After completing his bachelor's degree, he began a career in education and coaching high school basketball in the mid-1990s in New York. We recently launched the Hoopheads Mentorship Program. We believe that having a mentor is the best way to maximize your potential and become a transformational coach. By matching you up with one of our experienced mentors, you'll develop a one-on-one relationship that will help your coaching, your team, your program, and your mindset. The Hoopheads Mentorship Program delivers mentoring services to basketball coaches at all levels through our team of experienced head coaches. Find out more at hoopheadspod.com or shoot me an email directly, mike@hoopheadspod.com. Our roster of shows is growing, so don't forget to check out all our other podcasts on the Hoopheads Pod Network, including Thrive with Trevor Huffman, Beyond the Ball, the CoachMaze.com podcast, Players Court, Bleachers and Boards, The Green Light, and our team-focused NBA podcasts, Cavalier Central, Knuck If You Buck, 305 Culture, Hashtag Lakers, Motor City Hoops, X's and O's NBA Breakdown, Spanning the Spurs, LA Hoops, The Wizards Hoops Analyst, and At the Buzzer. We're looking for more NBA podcasters interested in hosting their own show centered on a particular team. Email us info@hoopheadspod.com if you're interested in learning more and bringing your talent to our network. Get ready to take some notes as you listen to this episode with Chris Meadows, player development coach and author of I Am D1. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, and we are pleased to be joined by Chris Meadows, the author of the brand new book, I Am D1, and player development coach. Chris, welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast.
Hey, it's great to be here, Mike. I'm just really thrilled, man. You guys do such a great job with the podcast, and it's actually an honor for me to be here tonight, so I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we appreciate that, and we work hard to try to be able to provide value to our audience and to be able to draw out some of the great things that our guests have been able to do, and we're looking forward to digging in with you tonight for sure. We thought that the best way to serve our audience tonight would be to let you start off by giving your elevator pitch for your new book, I Am D1. Give us a quick overview of the book, the why behind it, and just tell us a little bit about where people can find out more about the book I Am D1 and what you've put together.
Well, hey, I appreciate the opportunity, and you know, it's a great question, you know, the why behind it. And I think it's a pretty easy and a pretty simple answer. Anyone who is in the world of youth sports, or, you know, see high school sports in general, you see the prominence that sports take in any particular family's life. So right now we have literally thousands, hundreds of thousands of young people and families who are on this track. And these young people, their ultimate goal is to play at the highest level in college sports, whether it's basketball, football, baseball, you name it. And I just so happen to focus on basketball because that's a large part of my background. And IMD1 is almost like a mantra that many kids use. You know, you can hear it as young as 9 or 10 years old. IMD1. You know, they know they want to play Division I sports, Division I basketball. But with that being said, there are a lot of things. There are a lot of intangibles, a lot of variables that are required along this road to travel basketball. And many families are willing to make the commitment, and many young people are willing to do what they think is necessary to achieve that goal. But there aren't many people who really understand not only what it requires, but understand the level of commitment, the details that are involved, and also the key things you need to do to ensure that you maximize your potential along this road. So you don't get a second chance to do it. You know, so once you start along this road, Mike and Jason, the key is, when you do something, when you engage in something where you only have one shot, you don't get a second chance. I mean, that is valuable. That requires that you have good resources. It requires that you have a knowledge of what you're trying to accomplish, and that you understand the commitment level, and that you're all in. And so those things all equate to success if you know how to handle it. And so many families want it. I see so many kids who want it, so many young people who want it. But it's like someone wanting to go to a beach, but they don't have a roadmap. They don't have a way to get there. They don't have a GPS. So IMD1 is really like a GPS that was formulated really out of the ability to just care and love these young people enough to just say, man, I can't watch this. I don't want to watch it. I want to be a part of the solution. I want to help them so that they maximize their ability, their resources, and at the end of the road, they grab a hold of this goal. So that's what was behind IMD1, How to Conquer the World of Travel Basketball.
We are going to dive into the book much more as we go through the entire episode and we learn more about Chris's story. Before we move to that, though, I want you to share, where can people pre-order the book and find out more about it? And then we'll also share this at the end of the episode, but I think it's important to get that out there right here at the top.
Well, right now, you can actually go and pre-order. You can pre-order the book today, tonight, when you hear this, at imd1thebook.com. We kind of made it simple, imd1thebook.com. It will actually launch on Amazon. It will go live Monday night, April 5th, the night of the national championship game.
Nice, nice.
So we are going to kick it off with a bang the night of the day of the national championship, April 5th. And then you will be able to find this in your big box sporting good retailers as well. So it's not a conventional book that should be placed in a Barnes and Noble. Not that many people are going out anyway. So we are going to meet our customers and our people, our families and players where they are. So when you go into those sporting good retailers, you'll be able to see and get your hands on IMD1, the book.
That's awesome. And I think that anybody who's listened to our show for more than a couple episodes knows that one of the things that I truly believe is important when you talk about helping players and parents to navigate the travel basketball space is educating them on what they should look for. Because as you well know, when people are going through this experience, as you said, they only get one shot at it. And a lot of parents, especially if you have one child and it's your first child, or you have one child who maybe is more talented or more willing and dedicated to the game of basketball, you're not quite sure what you're supposed to do. And when it's your first time through it, if you don't have some guidance and you don't have somebody who has experience like you have, or like I have, who have been through it as a player and been through it as a coach and maybe even been through it as a parent, then it's easy to make bad decisions and it's easy to get information that can throw you off track. And so I think that what you've created here, and as I said, we'll dive into this a little bit deeper as we go through your whole entire story, but what you've created here is going to be a tremendously valuable resource for parents and kids who are trying to navigate today's youth basketball system. So let's go back in time to when you were a kid. Tell us a little bit about your first experiences with the game of basketball and how you got involved in the game when you were younger.
Well, it's interesting. You know, I actually, this part was actually edited from the book. Because I wanted to be more, not so many stories, but I can remember being young. I had two older brothers, and in our neighborhood, we had guys who really could play. I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and you wouldn't think a lot of ball players would come from there, but we did have a lot in the part of Phoenix I grew up in. You know, with guys like Stevie Coulter, who was a point guard with MJ when he first got to the Bulls. We just had a lot of big time players. Mark Allery played at Duke. And so I used to go and travel with my brothers in the neighborhood. And it was interesting. I was young, and they didn't always want me to go. But I would see these guys playing, man. And I'm telling you, I would actually sometimes I would sneak. I would just follow them at a distance. And they start playing. They look up, and there I am. And so eventually they just start saying, all right, come on, let's go. We know you're going to come anyway. And I would see these games. And I would see these games just, I mean, the guys doing things just right there in the neighborhood. I mean, dunking the ball, doing all sorts of things. And then as I got older, I would be able to go to see these same guys play in high school. And I can remember going to see some of these games where it was literally standing room only. And the same guys in my neighborhood that would be in my house or we'd be playing in someone's backyard, they were the stars in these games, in these major high school games. And so from that point on, I was already hooked. So I joined the boys club when I was about 8 or 9 years old. And man, it just took off like a wildfire. And I played every sport. So I played, you know, in Arizona, baseball, football. I was a golfer. But man, in the end, basketball just my love all just kind of migrated towards basketball.
At what point did basketball kind of overwhelm all the other sports? When did you start to really zero in on the game of basketball?
Well, I continued to play basketball and football exclusively all the way up through middle school. And I played freshman football and I separated my shoulder. I was a quarterback and I got injured and I only played maybe the first 5 games. And I came back. I missed a few games in basketball season. And then I was moved up to varsity as a freshman and we had some really good players in our state. And that was the last time I played football after that injury. And, you know, at that point, it just took off. It was like I played basketball every day, all day in the summer. I went from gym to gym to gym. I'd play with the guys at Arizona State University in their rec center. It was called PE West. You know, they had a bunch of guys that could really play and went to the NBA and we'd play. I remember being in eighth grade and I was on my eighth grade coach. My middle school coach sent me. He actually paid for me to go to the camp. He was like, you need to go to this camp. And Doug Collins was the coach there. It's funny. Doug Collins and Henry Bibby, Mike Bibby's dad was the coach at Arizona State. And so I went there. And, man, just so happened, I don't know if you remember this name, Lafayette Lever, Fat Lever.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Denver Nuggets.
Yeah.
Dude, he was the original, one of the original triple guys. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
No doubt.
He was a cool guy, man. It was a funny story. He had just got a new bike because, you know, they ride bikes around campus. And when you come into the activity center, Arizona State, it's a steep ramp, like where like the visitors and everybody would come in, like if you're driving a bus or something. And I'm riding his wasn't a mountain bike back then. It was like a 10 speed or something. And I hit the front brakes and I flip over and I literally crack his front bike tire. And he had just gotten the bike the same day.
That's not good.
So, but I go to that camp, man, and I did pretty well and I was moved up. And at that time, that's kind of like, you know, that was a turning point where my name really started to get out there as one of the premier players to watch going to that camp. So that was a big moment for me.
All right. Give people an idea of, if we have any parents listening, I'm sure coaches, especially coaches who are around our age, kind of have an understanding. But just give people an idea of the way that you grew up in the game of basketball. We kind of got a little window of it with what you were talking about when you said going from gym to gym and chasing down games with guys that were older than you when you were in seventh, eighth grade. But I don't think that the kids that grow up today necessarily understand how different it was back when you were growing up, back when I was growing up, where there was so much more pickup basketball. And I don't know what the pickup basketball outdoor scene was like in Phoenix when it was 100 degrees in the summertime. But just give us an idea of what your what your basketball experiences looked like as a middle school and high school kid, maybe comparatively to what a kid's experience growing up in Phoenix might be like today.
It's day and night. It's day and night. First of all, there weren't trainers back then. There were literally no trainers. If there was, I didn't have one. You know, I didn't hear about it. None of my friends who played at a high level didn't. We actually, if your coach worked with you on something, he would work with you. But for me, growing up, it was literally, we knew where the pickup games were. And we would go to those gyms. And if you got there before all the guys did, you shot. You know, the big thing was we'd go around the world, you know, seven spots, back and forth. Or you create moves. You know, I'd watch Isaiah Thomas play, and I literally would study his moves. Like, I would mimic everything he did because he was a dynamic point guard at the time. And then when I got to high school, KJ was playing for Phoenix. And he was a little older than me, and he would actually come in and hoop with us. So we would literally, my routine was pick up ball, and we knew where the parks were at night. And then it was just gym to gym to gym. And literally, before it was even a phrase, ball was life. It wasn't about training. Like, if we play one-on-ones all day, like my best friend, you know, we stay pretty much together every summer, and we would get up and we would go out and we would shoot. We would go down to the park, we'd go to the gym. And then we got to high school, you know, summer leagues, that was a big deal. And I was pretty fortunate. Like, when I was in high school, I was probably like maybe a sophomore, and Paul Westfall, I think he passed recently. You know, before he was a coach for the Phoenix Suns, he was a coach at Grand Canyon College. It wasn't even D1 then. It was an NAIA. And Walter Davis, Larry Nance, like all the Phoenix Suns would play in this gym. And I was the only high school guy. It was close run. No one knew about it. And they let me play with them. So I literally got a chance to play with NBA All-Stars as a ninth and 10th grader. And I probably didn't take even one shot a game, but I didn't even care. It was like I was on the floor and I was playing defense and I was just giving up the ball. But man, that experience right there, I would leave there and go home, go to a park, go to a gym and work on my game. So the next day when I come back, I'd want to show those guys that I could really play. So the basketball scene was about really competing. And, you know, you had to have a little swag because there were no parents. No parents took you to the gym. That was unheard of. My dad worked. So you really had to have a love for it. And it was all about just trying to find out where the players played. And that's what we did pretty much every day.
All right. I'm going to jump in.
Go for it.
Chris, so I want to know, do you have a memorable story that you can share with us from playing with the NBA players? Is there something that stands out in your mind that you think of, the first thing that you think of when you played with them?
Yeah, I mean, yes, I do, because Walter Davis growing up was one of my idols. You know, he played at Carolina, I guess. I didn't know him then. I just knew Walter when he played with the Suns. And then Larry Nance, you know, he was won the dunk contest, dunking the two balls, one in each hand. So I'm in the gym with these guys. And first of all, you know, I was confident. So I, even though I was young, I was like, man, I'm going to show these guys I can play. and the game was playing at a different pace. And it was much easier because those guys didn't drive. I mean, they were so talented. They just shot the ball. Like, they made it simple. They were pros. But I can remember playing, and there were some guys who played college ball were home, and maybe some pros from overseas. And one day, you know, guys would just kind of, they dismissed me. You know, some people did. While I was playing, Walter and Larry Nance would always make sure that I played with them. Come on, little guy. Come on, little man. Let's go. You with us. And I remember playing, and it was, you know, a lot of elite players. And I made a move one time, and I put a guy down, like he fell. And then I finished the basket. And I'm so locked in that I turn around. I'm playing defense. I'm just really playing defense. And I'm looking around. No one, you know, the game stops. I'm looking around, and all the pros are on the floor laughing. You know, they're actually laughing at the guy that was guarding me because he used to talk so much smack. And they were just laughing. I mean, they were razzing him. They were all over this dude. And so, you know, that was kind of like a coming of age moment for me. They were like, oh, you belong now. You know, like, you know, so that was something that stood out for like a, you know, like a 15-year-old 10th grader who was playing with those guys. So that was kind of a fun story. But just seeing those guys behind the scene, not on TV. I mean, I couldn't even sleep at night the nights before we went to play pickup with those guys. I'd be so excited.
And isn't it amazing that your experience is eerily similar to what mine was in terms of driving around and finding gyms and finding the courts where people were playing? And it always amazed me that somehow all these good players kind of knew where the runs were on a given night. You knew which gym on a Tuesday night, which gym you were supposed to be at, and you knew which playground had good games on Sunday. And when you were younger, you knew you had to get there early so you could get in that first game and maybe have a chance to run on the court. You know, when you're 14, you're like, I got to be the first guy there so that, you know, when they put the first 10 together and they're still waiting on somebody, I can sneak in that first game. And then I got to be the last one to leave because maybe when everybody's tired, I'll be able to sneak back into that last game. It's amazing to me that everybody just kind of knew. And I don't know how it was when you were growing up in Phoenix, but there were some gyms and playgrounds that we would occasionally go to and play at where you were like, this is the best gym that this level of player can find. Like there was a Cleveland Heights YMCA here that's in a suburb of Cleveland. And it's like this really small YMCA gym. The walls are brick. They're like a foot from the sidelines and the baseline. It's probably, I don't know, the court was probably like two thirds the size of a regulation court. And there were times you'd go there and there'd be NBA players in there. Ron Harper would be in there playing, or Cedric Toney would be in there playing. And, you know, you look at that now and you're like, why were these guys playing in these little gyms where they're going to get smashed into the wall and all these different things? It's just, I look back on those times and I've said it so many times on the podcast, but I really feel like that, and I can hear it in the enthusiasm in your voice too, how important that was to you in your development as a basketball player, but just in terms of the sheer enjoyment and love of the game that you develop through that. And that's one of the things that I sometimes worry about in today's system, that we get so caught up in what the next step is going to be and what I have to do in order to get to be a middle school player, and what I have to do to be a high school player, and what I have to do to be this. And we sometimes forget that, hey man, it's a game and it's supposed to be fun. And I think sometimes when you always play with officials and you always play with your mom and dad in the stands, as you referenced, that, you know, mom and dad weren't taking you to the gym. You were getting there yourself with your buddies and figuring out how to do that. And it's a different system. And there are obviously a lot of positives to what goes on today. But I do think that there's some factor, and I don't know what you call it, maybe just an it factor, that I think kids miss out on today. And like I said, I can hear the enthusiasm for that system in your voice for sure.
Oh yeah. And you know, it's just something that I wouldn't trade it for the world, because one of the things that, you know, I felt compelled, I was talking to maybe Skylar Diggins' dad, and we were talking about the book. It was right when I finished writing it. And he used a phrase that I thought, wow, you just articulated how I felt. You put it into words. And And what he did is he said, Chris, you basically were obligated to write this book. Like he said, you know, and that's what he just told me that. And I was like, wow, you know, I felt like I had to give back, you know, it was something I wanted to give back, and not just to the families and the players in my within my grasp. You know, there are a lot of kids, not only in America, but throughout the world that are trying to come and play Division I sports, Division I basketball. And the way I grew up playing it, you know, it's really when you get to the core of basketball, when you get to those elite players, even in high school, there's nothing like a gym packed with the best players to play pickup. Like, you know, people would pay money for that. And a lot of kids today are robbed of that opportunity. And to me, that's where your IQ, that's where your toughness comes in. That's where that just confidence. I built confidence in a vacuum. No one, no parent can foster that. That came from just me competing against the best. So, you know, there was a time, it's interesting, Mike, when I was a junior, a sophomore maybe, I got invited to a really good camp. It was one of the best in the country. It was called the Blue Chip All-American Camp, and I got an invite. And I remember, like, Rex Chapman, all those guys were there. It was, like, on the border of Ohio and Kentucky.
And I went to Blue Chip when I was a kid.
Yeah, it was crazy. I went there, and I played in, and they had me in the top division, you know. So I was like, wow, you know, I didn't know what to expect. And I played against a lot of good players, but I had never been in an environment like that where guards were 6'5", you know, doing what I did, you know, mess shooting around, guys flying through the air, boom, you know, dunking the ball. So before that, I worked out pretty much solo by myself. It's funny. I would take, it's no joke, I would take the chairs from my kitchen table. My mother wasn't around. I would take them in my backyard and I would literally be working on moves, like going around the chairs, just working on moves. So when I went there with another good buddy of mine. He got an invite too. So we flew from Phoenix, you know, out to, I think, somewhere in Ohio. And then they picked us up and drove us to the camp. And man, I was in a zone that entire weekend. You know, what's funny about it? It was the same exact, I woke up one day and it was the day Lynn Bias died. That's why I'll never forget.
Wow. I was at basketball camp. I was at a team camp when Mark West, who played for the Cleveland Cavaliers, was speaking. And I remember somebody from the camp, like one of the coaches, came walking out while Mark West was talking and whispered in his ear. And then Mark West was the person who told us campers as we were sitting there. And I was probably, I don't know, so that would have been, I guess I was probably maybe a sophomore in high school, maybe in that year.
Yeah, and we're probably about the same age. I was maybe a sophomore too.
Yeah, so somewhere in there, I might have been a little younger, but I graduated from high school in 88.
So I was 87.
Okay, all right, yeah. So we're right there. Yeah. So we were somewhere in that same vicinity, and yeah, that was shocking for sure. That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, I'll never forget because of that. You know, I was there, but you know, I actually at that Blue Chip All-American camp, I ended up being selected. Back then, they used to have like a top whatever. They had two All-Star games. I made the top 15 or top whatever All-Star game, and I didn't even know they were going to have an All-Star game. You know, first of all, it was the final night of the camp. And it was amazing. All these college coaches were sitting around the court. And I didn't play the best in the All-Star game, but just to make it, you know, with all those guys. And from that point on, like, I knew. When I came back, I knew that I had a chance, like, to do something really special. Because the guys who were at that camp, they were guys who, you know, they played for years in the league, you know, in the NBA. So that was an awesome experience.
All right. Well, talk a little bit about how that experience and your high school experience, how does that lead into your college decision? Talk us a little bit about your own experiences being recruited and how you made the decision to pick the school that you did, and just give us a little bit of background on all that.
So this is interesting. And this is sort of the fuel that I always have for young people here. So like we were talking about, my parents really weren't, they were supportive, but they weren't involved. I don't know if that's a contradiction, but they, you know, I have six sisters, three brothers. It was 10 of us in a family. So we had a clan, you know. So my dad was working. My mom was, you know, taking care of the home. And you know, when I played ball, that was something I did. Like today, we're all invested in our kids' sports, you know, but my dad was like, hey, I'll come see you play. So one of the things that happened with me was school was never a challenge to me. Like school was never difficult. But when I got older, I actually wasn't as focused as I should have been. So I actually ended up going as a prop 48. That was a first year or second year. I don't know if you remember that.
Absolutely.
And
yep.
It was like embarrassing because I had all these scholarship opportunities. Like I had like a trash bag full of letters and all these coaches. And I played as a senior. It was me. I played against like Kenny Anderson, if you remember him from New York.
Absolutely. Yep.
Malik Seeley was on
St.
that
John's.
Team.
Like, yep.
Yep. They would play for Riverside Church. Like, and I was one of the premier point guards in America. Like back then they had the old magazine Street and Smith. So yep. I was actually in Street and Smith and all that. So we didn't have YouTube.
the Blue Ribbon College Basketball book. Do you remember that? Put out by Chris Wallace. I used to get that thing, and I would have the top whatever 50 high school players memorized every year. I'd look at those little tiny black and white photos. I'd read their stats. I'm like, can I match any of these guys? Am I as good? Like, I might be as good as this guy. Who knows, you know? So,
yeah, that was great, man. That gave you some imagination back then. No, it was no ESPN top whatever or
for sure.
You know, all that. So I had to go JUCO. But coming out of high school, you know, I played senior prep. And we played against – this was my class that I played against in all this senior all-star game. Larry Johnson, LeBradford Smith, Eric Murdoch, Lee Mayberry. These are all, like, first-round guys who – you know, Lee won a national championship. Larry Johnson won at UNLV.
Yep.
So these are all the guys that I played against. Like, we became friends because we ended up going at each other on every major event. So, you know, and so I ended up going JUCO and I come out. I went to South Mountain Community College. And so when I came back out, there's a certain thing that you'll relate to, basketball people will grab. It's hard to stay on the same trajectory when you get off that path. And so I got off of that path that probably could have led me to at least being in a NBA camp coming out. So I try to get back on, and coming out, I end up choosing St. Bonaventure because I had to go somewhere. I had 2 years. I had to go somewhere where I could play. And when they recruited me, I was like, man, the A-10 was great back then. It had Penn State, Temple, Rutgers, you know, West Virginia, and we had like seven teams in the tournament. George Washington was good with Yink Adari and all those guys. So I ended up going there, and it was a great place for me to be at that time in my life. And, you know, basketball didn't go as I would hope, but, man, I just made some great, great relationships. And you know, one of my teammates is currently a almost a head NBA coach, and just made great relationships. But basketball, you know, basically it took me around the world. I was selected to play on an all-star team. We played in Spain. It was just a great experience for me, you know, college basketball, to play on ESPN and just do those things that now I look back, man, I cherish those opportunities.
And I think there's something to be said for that, Chris, when you start talking about, you know, just off the top, when we say that kids want to get to this next level and they want to be able to do this, they want to be able to do that. And one of the things that I always say is that you have to kind of stop and also make sure that you are looking around at what you're doing at any given moment and that you're enjoying the journey. And that's not to say that, you know, we can all define enjoy how we want to define it. And obviously there's tough moments and you got to work hard and you got to bust your tail to accomplish anything in this game. But I think what I see too often is you see people that are just focused on that pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. And for some people, maybe that's dreaming of an NBA career. And for other kids, it might just be being a high school varsity starter. But everybody's kind of always focused on that next thing. And what I take out of what you just shared with us is, you know, you had a lot of experiences that a lot of kids across the country are dreaming about. You got to play against guys who played in the NBA. You got to compete with them. And then maybe things didn't go quite the way that you had originally planned, but instead of being bitter about it, instead of being upset about it, you made the best of it and you look at it and you say, wow, what a great opportunity, and you took advantage of it. And I think that there's there's a powerful lesson in that, that the game can do so many great things for you beyond just whatever your ultimate goal in the game is, which clearly for most kids at some point, everybody dreams about playing in the NBA. And for most of us, you know, we fall short of that and we don't make it.
Hey, hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off.
Just like you, when I look back on my time as a player, it's tremendously valuable. So to go along with that, why don't you share for us, either from high school or college, just give us your favorite moment from your basketball career as either a high school player or a college player.
Wow, you ask great questions. You're forcing me to really kind of go back, man. It's not like I graduated last year.
All right, well, good. That's part of my job here. That's what I'm supposed to do.
You know, I'll just thinking about that, I just enjoy the game so much. I love the game so much. But, you know, I have a couple from St. Bonaventure. But one of the things that I enjoy most, so the junior college I went to, you know, briefly, it was never a great basketball program. And I was recruited by all the best junior college programs. But I'm proud that I was the first and only team at that time to ever make it to the national junior college playoffs, where that, you know, I helped put that school on the map. So when I go back there, that team picture is still hanging up there. And that kind of opened the floodgates. And I was one of the first guys to ever get a Division I scholarship from going there. So, you know, I have a legacy there, and that's pretty cool. Cause at the time I was so confident in what I did. I just figured wherever I go, we're going to win, you know, and it wasn't about me scoring 50. I was a point guard. You know, I only averaged probably like 14, 15, but we won, you know, and that's what, to me, that defines a legitimate point guard. You got to win. So, you know, that was big. And then as a sophomore, you know, man, playing in Phoenix, Arizona, something that I cherish. And I was on a podcast a couple months ago, and the host actually went and dug up some articles, and I hadn't seen them since high school. And, you know, I had to rub it in my kid's face. You know, I was like, see, I told you I could play. But I was able, you know, I was one of the top like five scorers in the state, as a sophomore, you know, as a 15-year-old playing varsity. And that was just nothing I shot for. It was just a result of just, you know, just playing hard. But that was a pretty cool thing to be able to do. And back then, like I said, we didn't have internet. So you just have to get the paper. So, you know, that's what I would be doing in my first block. Instead of paying attention, I was probably reading the sports page.
Yep.
So, so those are some cool memories. And then my final memory is my first major game in St. Bonaventure. A lot of the audience may not remember this, but he was like the biggest recruit in the country. And I had to match up with 6'5 point guard Mark Macon at Temple. You know, I started that game, and he was like a lottery pick, I think, played for John Chaney, who just passed. And, you know, I was like, man, I'm looking around like I'm doing this. You know, I'm here. You know, I'm competing against this guy. I saw all his stuff on TV. So that was like a reality check moment where, hey, you just got to go compete now, you know. And now those are moments that I hope every kid gets a chance to experience. Like you said, it's so much pressure put on kids today. Man, I was just playing. Like, I literally was just playing. And if I had a different mindset, I may have been able to play at a higher level after college. But I played hard, but I was just playing, man. It wasn't pressure on me. You know, it was no pressure on me. And a lot of kids today, they got so much pressure. They can't enjoy those moments.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think that it's definitely a case now where there is a lot of pressure, because you said it very well when you talked about your parents, that they were supportive, but not necessarily involved in what you were doing. And today, it's very, very rare. And now we're not just talking about you who was an elite player. We're talking about kids who, you know, might barely make their middle school team that have parents that are super involved and super invested and are in the stands and are putting pressure on their kid. And it goes back to what I said before. I think that sometimes that sucks some of the fun out of the game. And I've said it numerous times on the podcast that some of my best basketball moments, if you ask me for some of my favorite basketball memories, I'll have some from my high school career. I'll have some from my college career, but I'll have a bunch from the playground and from playing pickup basketball. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are things that just don't, I think kids today miss out on that because, as you said, they feel a tremendous amount of pressure. And I think social media adds to that because, as you said, when you're playing pickup basketball in Phoenix, Arizona as a kid, you have no idea that there's a kid in Massachusetts that's really good or some kid in Seattle that's tearing it up. Now, everybody knows everybody and you can watch whatever videos you want. You can compare yourself to whoever you want, this person's highlights and that person's highlights. And it's just a really, really challenging environment, which is why I think that what you're trying to do here in educating people is such a tremendous, it has such tremendous value because people just need to understand what the process looks like so they can better navigate it. One, so that hopefully they do get better results and they can achieve their goal. But two, hopefully along the way, they can take the time to stop and really enjoy what they're doing. Because again, the reason why we all pick up a ball when we're a kid is because it's fun, because we love watching that ball go through the net. And that's why kids start playing the game and you hope that that love for it continues. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about as you're in college, your degree is in elementary education. So were you thinking teacher and coach as you were thinking about what you wanted to do with the rest of your life? Or just give me an idea of what your mindset was as you were getting ready to graduate from school.
Well, you know, as soon as I finished, I was fortunate. You know, the NBA Summer League at that time was in, it was in California, it was in LA. And so I got an invite to play. They used to have free agent teams. So Dwayne Casey was my coach. The Dwayne Casey, who's an NBA coach right now, he was actually my NBA summer league coach. And I played with like Jonathan Edwards. He used to play with Georgetown. Like we had a really good team. And I kind of got it out of my system. You know, I went at that level and I'm like, man, I don't have an agent. These guys are like, it was a different game. And you see the NBA teams come and play. So my thing was, you know, I had a really good life. I was happy with my experience. So I was like, you know, I want to work with young people. Like I literally, the people who impacted me the most were like my middle school coaches, Coach Varela, Coach Love. Like I still remember those guys. When I go home, I used to go see them. And I was like, I want to have an impact on young people. So I was like, definitely going to coach. But I was like, I want to teach. You know, I want to be in a school. I want to do that. It wasn't even about the money. Like it really wasn't about the money at that point. Like it was, you know, I was young, just coming out of college. And so when I finished school, I actually got a job teaching at a place in Western New York called Randolph Academy. And it was a school for kids that had trouble. You know, it was like alternative school. And I start there, I'm looking around all these kids. I'm like, man, they have no athletics here, like no team. So we started a club team. And a year later, we were actually admitted to the state, New York State High School Federation. And then a year after that, we won. We won our conference and went to the state playoff.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
A bunch of kids that never played. They were always in trouble. It was like watching an old White Shadow movie or something. You know, it was, you know, Ken Reeves. It was like, you know, Joe Clark. It was funny, but it was so rewarding to see these guys have success that had never, you know, had success. And we trained and actually had a guy end up going to play at a high level. You know, one of my guys, he ended up getting a Division I scholarship. And we just used to work. You know, we were just in the gym. And that was like just when things were different. I didn't have any kids at that time. So coming out of college, you know, my whole purpose was really to have an impact with young people and really teach the game, because I felt like, you know, in all due respect, I just felt like I had some people. Not all my coaches, but a few coaches, I used to wonder, like, because I was very fortunate to have good coaches when I was young. So when I got older, I had a couple of coaches and I was like, I want to make sure that I can teach kids how to play. Because I knew, I'm going to be honest with you, there was one situation I got in where I knew that there were two situations. We played against a guy named Big Car Starf, and he was a point guard with Mark Macon at Temple. He had transferred back from Iowa. When I played this guy, I realized this kid knows something I don't know, and I don't have coaches who can teach me that. So that's when you talk about not having trainers. Like, he knew how to alleviate defensive pressure and stuff like that. I would pressure him, and I would talk junk, and I would always be able to get people, rip him. This kid would just do little things. He was savvy. I was like, man, it's like I can't even bother this guy. So I wanted to be able to teach kids on the court, like, how to really be effective. You know, whether you're white, black, you know, fast, slow. Like, if I coached you, as a matter of fact, what was funny, I started a travel team called the Western New York Shooting Stars. And one of my former college teammates was a college coach at Kent State. He was an associate head coach. And he came to see us play. He was at Bob Gibbons at Ohio State tournament.
Okay, who was the coach?
Garland Mance was his name. He was my.
I don't know him personally, but I know of him.
Yeah, he played with Jalen Rose on the same high school team in Detroit Southwestern. And he was a really good college coach. So this is a funny story. He comes to see us play. And we're beating teams. Like, we beat, and I was ignorant. I didn't know, like, oh, these teams are such and such, select from, you know, Connecticut. I'm just head down working with my guys in the corner of Western New York. So we go on these tournaments, and our team racially is like, we're probably like six white guys, four black guys, and me, you know, 5'10" black guy coaching this team. And my boy comes up to me after one of our games. He's watching us play. He's like, man, you look like the old school Boston Celtics.
That's
He's
funny.
Like, nobody thinks you guys are going to win, you know, but we were winning. And it was such, like, I still have a close bond with all those guys today, because that was a joke. Like, we go in, we would laugh, like, and you know, we're going to be up by 20 before they realize we can play, because they don't even warm up hard. Some teams will sit on the bench like, oh, what are we doing? And so that was my passion. Like, coming out of college was just, man, whoever I connect with, I want to help these kids become great and earn a scholarship. It wasn't even about D1 back then. So that's the thing about the book. People think it's exclusively about the level. It's not about the level. It's not about the level.
All right. So let me ask you this. When you started out, what's something that immediately as a coach that you knew you were good at? And then conversely, what's something that maybe didn't come as naturally to you about coaching? And it could maybe be something off the floor or administratively or on the floor, whatever. But what's something that you felt like it was a natural fit for you as a coach? And what was something that maybe you had to work a little bit harder at to perfect your craft?
Leadership and connecting with players was natural. Like, if I ever had to talk to a family about getting a kid to play for me, it was over. It's still that way today. Like, I, not in a confident, not in an arrogant way at all, but I know I can do that because I can relate. Whether you're black, whether you're white, Hispanic, and I have kids of my own. And back then, I just loved the game. So my thing was, I know that your son, your daughter, what they want, and I can help them get it. Because it wasn't about me right back then. Like, I didn't care about a name. I didn't care about the big name coaches. It was about me making sure my kids were going to be successful. So I knew I was good at that. And I knew I was good at motivating and teaching the game. But what I wasn't good at was I had to really learn the X and O, not the X and O IQ wise, but I had to go learn offenses that would really allow my players to play. Like, I had to go learn different sets that would really, like, you know, so we wouldn't be like a one trick pony. Okay, we take that away. These guys can't hoop. So I had to really start studying, like, basketball. Like, hey, what are some sets that are going to get movement on this side? What are some sets like quick hitters for my guys who can really shoot that can't maybe put it on the floor? Like, I had to become a student more so. When I was a point guard, I was a student, but now it's a different perspective. I had to learn this thing from a coaching perspective in terms of late game situations. I know how to do it, but I don't know what to do in terms of, do I have the right play for this situation? So I had to really become like, stay up at night, like, you know, back then, watch games and video record them. And so I had to really study to help my players be successful. And I put in a lot of work. And then with the player development part, that was always work. Like, I never stopped doing that. I would just get videos and break things down. And so I had to work to become a good coach in terms of just making my players successful in game situations. You know, you can be a great communicator, which a lot of coaches are. You can be a great motivator. But, man, some people are gifted at just X and O, and I had to work at that. That wasn't natural for me because I was always so good off the bounce. I didn't need a play. I definitely didn't want to screen because I knew my man couldn't guard me. So don't give me a screen because I was going to beat my guy. But when I started coaching, I had to humble myself and say, you got to get better, man. It's a lot you don't know. So that was something I had to work on.
I think that's really interesting because I think, especially if you're a former player, what oftentimes happens is that you go back and you teach and run and do the things that the coaches that you played for did, because that's what you know. Like my first job as a coach, I was a JV basketball coach at Bay High School here in the state of Ohio. And my first 2 years as that JV coach, I basically ran the same drills, the same offense, everything that I had learned from either my high school coach, who I played for the same high school coach my entire high school career, and I played for the same college coach my entire college career. And so those were really the only two coaches that I was around. And I didn't recognize my shortcomings quite as fast as you did. I just thought, hey, I was a good player. I know what I'm doing. And I've got this wealth of knowledge that I can share with people. And I didn't necessarily go out, especially when I was younger, and do some of the things that you described, which is go out and study the game and go to clinics and take the time and break down the X's and O's. I kind of just always relied on, well, hey, I was a good player. And I wish, looking back retrospectively, I kind of wish I had spent more time doing what you described, which is, you know, watching games and breaking things down and using film a lot more. But for whatever reason, back at that time, I just didn't do it. And it's interesting that you were able to recognize that pretty early on. And I'm sure that tremendously had a positive impact on what you did right from the get-go and then continue to improve throughout your career as a coach and working with the player development stuff. And as film gets better and easier to use, I'm sure you continue mm-hmm. to utilize it more, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm a film junkie. And what's funny is when I'm by myself, my wife will come in the room, and if my daughter and my son, you know, they don't live home now because they're both in college, but if my wife isn't in the room, I watch games without the sound. And she's like, why do you do that? And I'm like, because I really want to see the game. Because announcers, they can sway. You know, I don't always watch it for entertainment. I'm really trying to learn and see who does what well and how things are going and what are they doing here. And so I watch the game really without sound. And I'm like, man, this coach is just off the hook. Like, they come out of a timeout and they score. I pick up so many things, and I'll rewind it, and I actually break down a lot of film, and I'll post certain things. You know, like I broke down, I did a 90-second clip with the Celtics and Kemba Walker on screen and roll, just how they cleared out the empty side. Like everything with Brad Stevens, man, he's master. Like what he does and how he lets his players play, but he puts them in situations where you have one or two options. So you better be good at either making his pocket pass or hitting a floater. And if they come, you got to throw the lob and how they set it up. And it's going to work because you have to react to it. So I'm always breaking down film, and I'll save it on my phone. So if there's a quick hitter that I see, I'm going to go back to it at some point if I'm coaching a game, or if there's something like my daughter, she's a college point guard. So I'll send her a lot of stuff. You know, I'm like, hey, you need to look at this. You need to like really incorporate this in your game or things like that. So I'm a film junkie, video junkie.
How do you incorporate that stuff? How do you store it? Because I know if you're watching as much as what you're describing, that you're seeing stuff all the time that you're like, oh, I want to mm-hmm. steal that, or oh, I need to incorporate this into what we do. So do you have a system for storage for that? You have a file system, or how do you go about doing that? Obviously, the technology to be able to do it is much better than it was 10 or 15 years ago. But just what's your process like for when you see something, again, whether it's a play, whether it's just a quote, whether it's whatever. Mm-hmm. What's your system for kind of putting that away so that you can reference it? Or do you not have one and you're just kind of just hodgepodge?
Nah, I'm actually getting better, man. At this point, I'm like, I can't keep bad habits. So I actually upgraded my phone to like 256 gig storage, because I don't really store anything on my computer because I can never get to it when I need
it. Right.
So everything is on my phone, and either you can do it through, you know, Google Drive, or if you got the cloud, and I have a Dropbox account. So, and then I had created a file just in my Google, in my my photos on my phone, my Apple, you know, my whatever photos with iPhone. So I will literally just hit pause on the TV, get my camera out, and I'll run it back and I'll record it. And then what I do is I have a system where I actually immediately input it into iMovie. And so I can voice over. Like I have two different apps. So I'll go to iMovie, boom, drop it, you know, cue it up, and I'll rewind it back. I'll voice over, you know, and I'll cut it and I'll play it again. I'll duplicate the film. Like I break it down, boom, 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 real quick. And so like one of my friends, he's a pretty, maybe the most successful college assistant in the country. And so we talk, and he's a junkie like me. So we'll actually end up calling and texting like 1 a.m. He's still up. He'll hit me with a text. I'm like, yeah, I'm up. It's a little laugh because I'm watching video. So he'll be like, it was a play that one of the WNBA teams ran at the end of a game. And when we finished this, I'll have to send it to you. It was the cleanest quick hitter I've ever seen in my life. It was like watching a pinball machine. Bing, 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 bing. Next thing you know, it was a layup. And I was telling him about it. He's like, hey, I got it right here. He sent it to me. He was like, that was a great play. I'm like, man, who? I'm thinking nobody else in the world like would record that. And you know, he had the name of it, everything. So that's what I do. So I'll actually rewind things. And it's not basketball. So we're watching the Super Bowl. And I tell my wife, hey, I got to rewind this real quick. So I see something. I forget. I don't know if it was Brady or somebody did something. I'm like, that's something that I need to talk about when I'm talking to a group of people or players. Like anything that is sports related that I feel can help people, it's in my phone. It's in my phone. And that's what I do. I'll store it, you know, save it, store it. And if I need to use it for illustration, I'll input it in right into iMovie and just keep it, queue it up.
That's awesome. I mean, I think it's interesting talking to people. That's a question that I love to ask whenever somebody says that, you know, I like to get this information, or I like to steal this, or I go to a clinic, or I'm watching film late at night. And it's always fascinating to hear how different people, you have to set up your system that works for you. And I love kind of hearing how people organize themselves and organize their day and organize all their information. So that's very cool that you have it all on your phone, because obviously you're carrying that with you all the time. So it gives you access instantly, no matter what you're doing, no matter where you are. And it sounds like a good system. So let's talk a little bit about what you did. You eventually relocated to Charlotte, North Carolina. And at that point, you started the Momentum Skills Academy. So talk to us about what that has been like for you. Give us an idea of what you do there in Charlotte, all the different programs you have. And then as we work our way through that, we'll start working towards the idea and how you came up with the idea for writing the book.
All right. Well, you know, this, you know, I was kind of already shared what was happening in Western New York training, you know, I'm coaching. And then I, you know, my son was born. My daughter was really young. We moved here like maybe third grade. And my son was probably like six. They're two grades apart. So immediately I jump into the high school coaching business. And as soon as I land, I connect with like the top travel programs. And my brother knew some guys out here. So he kind of, you know, prearranged the meetings. And I get connected with one of the top boys programs with talent wise in the country. And then I get a job and I get a varsity coaching job. So I'm training in the summer and I'm coaching. And man, it's just like, that was it. You know, that was my life. My son's playing, you know, he's in middle school now. He gets a little older. So the longer I'm here, the more people I meet and the more I start to train. And then it just gets amped up. Like, if you've never been in Carolina, like it's hoop, they call it hoop state for a reason. Like it is hoop state 24/7. Like where I was, it was, you know, you could spring, you know, snow melt, might do something different. No, it was like basketball year round, and not just that basketball year round, level 10. I mean, I love the game, but as an adult, I had never experienced anything like it. And the parents were more committed than the kids, unfortunately. So every kid had a trainer and it was serious. So I get swept right up in it. You know, that's my love. It's my passion. So next thing you know, I'm training these kids from all over. I'm just training kids from, you know, Greensboro, Charlotte. And, you know, and I'm still studying the game, and I still played a lot. You know, I was playing a lot. So next thing you know, I'm you know, coaching the middle school travel team. And then my high school guys are having success. You know, we're going to the playoffs and at a school that traditionally hadn't been very good. So I meet a guy, and he has this like basically a sportsplex where it has like indoor soccer fields. You know, he has like just kind of this space, and he had a half court with a net, like just with a half court glass backboard. So we talk, and he's like, hey, you want to just kind of rent the space? You can just pay to train. So next thing you know, it's like, it's funny, seriously, like 2 or 3 months, I got like 80, 90, 100 people just coming in on a regular basis, just like training.
So are you doing this full time at this point? Are you doing training at full time at this point? Or are you still teaching?
I wasn't at the time. I was still teaching.
Okay.
And then it got to the point where I'm like, you know, I'm looking at all these other trainers around here. I'm like, you know, I think I can make more money doing this than I do teach. And it's not work. It's a hobby, you know,
right,
like
for sure.
And so I'm looking up in this facility, and I'm looking around like, man, the majority of people coming in here are coming to wait on this court for me to train them. Because I used to start training at 3, you know, because I would teach until then.
Right.
And I'd be there till 10 at night. Then it started getting to where players were like, hey, coach, can we get in before school? So I go there from 5 to 6:15 and go to school. I'm like, okay. So he was like, would you like to just run this? Would you like to manage this? And we worked out a deal where I left teaching and I just came there. And I built it up to about 200 clients. And I had guys that play like SEC, ACC, Conference USA, high schools, like girls, boys. It was like spreading throughout the entire city of Charlotte and beyond. And then from there, it was like, okay, it may be time for you to think about getting your own facility. So, you know, found a location, you know, had some people help me. Like you said, things I know I'm not great at. I didn't major in business. So I found some people who were good with the business side of it in terms of just understanding how to acquire a building. And then we outfitted it. You know, we had it designed and we had a wood floor put in, NBA hoops at each end. We had a parent lounge to keep the parents away from the training floor. They had a glass window. They could stay. We called it the fishbowl. They'd be in the fishbowl so they would stay off the court. And so we went at it. And that's how the Momentum Skills Academy was born, right there.
Hey, coaches, parents, and group leaders. I want to introduce you to our newest sponsor, SnapRaise. SnapRaise is the nation's largest digital donation platform built to help teams, youth groups, and clubs raise money quickly and efficiently without selling products. SnapRaise builds your group a customizable campaign website, and students use their mobile devices to connect and engage with their biggest fans. My son's high school team used SnapRaise this season, and our team raised all the money they needed to fund their season and then some. Getting SnapRaise started is quick and free. Just visit SnapRaise.com and you'll get connected to a local SnapRaise expert in no time. Who was your first hire? Who was the first trainer that you hired to work underneath you?
Well, I wouldn't say he worked underneath me. I would say he worked alongside me because he was good. He used to work with me when I was at my other facility. And he's the only guy I really ever allowed my daughter to even train with, because not that I didn't trust people, but this guy knew his stuff. Like, he knew it and he loved it and he was good at it. Like, he has a guy right now that's with the Mavericks that he trained from when he was young. And his name was Jody, you know, and Jody, when my daughter got older, you know, it was like, okay, I got to know when to say when. I'd be training her, but she wasn't, you know, it's like pouring water in a cup with a lid. It wasn't going through. So I used to say, all right, you want to go to Jody? We'll take you to Jody. So, because daddy wasn't getting it no more. She wasn't trying to hear my voice anymore.
When did you come to that realization with your daughter? Because that's something that I find to be fascinating, because when I was training kids before I had my own kids, and people would come to me and they would say, you're telling him the exact same thing I was telling him, but he wouldn't listen to me. And I used to look at those people out of the corner of my eye like, what are you talking about? Like, you're crazy. And then once you have your own kids, you come to realize that they hear your voice on so many things that, as we've said all throughout the podcast tonight, basketball is supposed to be fun. And then there's a limit to how much they want to hear dad with their sport when they're already hearing dad on a million other things. So I completely can relate. But I think people who, if you're a trainer out there that doesn't have your own kids, you're probably still going, I don't really understand why my kid wouldn't listen to me. But it's true. It's totally true. And they need to hear a different voice.
They do. And Mike is crazy, man. I'm not going to say his name, but I have a point guard right now that's in 10th grade. And I trained this kid at that first facility I was telling you about. I trained him when he was probably 8. He was the youngest kid I ever trained. And this kid was talented. His dad was a former big-time college football player. And he would bring him to me, and I would be amazed at how good this kid was. And his dad would stand behind him. I told you we had a net where the half court was. His dad was standing there, and he would yell at him the whole time. He was like, "Gah!" And his dad, you know, he's a muscular guy. He's a good guy, too. But now we've kind of come full circle. We're back, and he's one of the hottest players in the country. He's legit. He's only a sophomore. Like, I went to see them play last night. He does stuff that some pro point guards don't do. But you know what Dad said? We started back watching video together last week. Dad's like, you can have him anytime you want. He's like, he's tuned him out. He literally tuned him out. His dad walked in one of our video sessions, and literally, he just tuned. So once his dad walked in, his body language changed. His demeanor changed. And he went on defense mode, like, you know, to kind of just argue with his dad. But when his dad left, man, he kind of led the discussion. And he's actually, I told his dad, man, your son is very smart, very mature, and he is an elite leader. Like, he's going to play at whatever school he wants. And the boy is tough, but he's tuned his dad out. He hears him, but it's not the same.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
I realize that with my daughter. Like, it's like, I can literally see it. Like, she'd be rolling her eyes. We'd be in a group. We're training with other kids. Like, she'd be, like, just looking at me like, will you shut up? Like, she wouldn't even look at me.
It's so true.
Like, she had attitude.
And I think the other thing, too, that's interesting is, and this is a decision that I think as a parent, it's hard to come to this realization, but I was always one, like, my kids, all of them, and I have three, none of them, I would say, up at least until this point in their life, have had anywhere near the love of the game like you described or like what I had growing up. And yet, as a parent, it's difficult sometimes to not, you know, you have to strike that balance of where do you push and where do you not push and where do you provide opportunity and where do you not and all those kinds of things. And so I think one of the things that you worry about as a parent, or that I think about and try to just look around at other experiences with other players and their parents and things I've seen and just the situation like you described with, you know, with the young man that you were working with and his father. At a certain point too, you have to look at like what's the harm you're doing to the long-term relationship if you keep being that person who's in their ear yelling at them on the basketball floor. At a certain point, do they become resentful and you damage that relationship? So when they're 25, they're looking back and going, "Man, I don't want to go see dad. That guy's a pain in the neck." And there's something to be
to put it nicely.
Yeah, I mean, but there's something to be said. There's something to be said for that. And I think it's a difficult, I mean, you know, trying to navigate that as a father and then as a coach on the other side of it. And then knowing that if your kid has some ability that you want to try to help them to get the most out of it and you kind of know what they should be doing, but yet they don't want to hear it from you. It's a difficult, difficult road to navigate properly, which again goes to educating yourself and in a lot of cases, educating other parents who are going through that for the first time, what that means and what it looks like.
You know, it's funny, man. I had a conversation with a good friend of mine. He's into basketball now. His son's a junior and he has another son in seventh grade. And we talked about that. And I told him, I said, you know, one of the things that I learned is this, and I told you about my friend who his son is really special.
For sure.
And it comes a point in time, like with me and my daughter, it came to a point in time where, you know, I thought she just wasn't as focused as she needed to be. And so sometimes being a parent, even if I wasn't in basketball, you got to be a parent and not a friend. So you got to make some tough decisions. But when you add in that basketball, it just magnifies everything. Because now, even when I go to do what I'm supposed to enjoy, guess who's telling me what to do?
Right. You know, yep,
like,
exactly.
It's like, I can't get away from this dude. So even if I'm not listening to him as a daughter or whatever. But when I go to do what I really like to do most, I got to look at him too. So, you know, it's one of those things where you have to make a decision. And this is what I shared with my guy earlier today. I know some people who really drove their kids hard, like drove them, like cattle, drove them. And they made it to the highest level. And some of them are even playing professionally. But at what point was it like the law of diminished returns? Because they made it, but you have no relationship with your child.
Right, exactly.
Like, was that worth it? They are millionaire, right, but now you can't even connect. Like, hey, me and my daughter, it was like fire and ice, man. Like, it was, we were going at it, like head-butting each other. Like, we were really, like, I'm telling you, like, no talking in the house. Everybody's uncomfortable. No talking at the dinner table. I'm mad. She's mad. And now it's like different. You know, when she came out of high school, she was one of the, she was rated as the number 43 player in the country. She went to Georgetown when she came out. And it's amazing. She has a love for the game that I have. Like, she really has a love. Like, she'll, Dad, send me your ESPN Plus password. I got to watch games today. You know, what time is Westbrook playing? Or, you know, like, she's, you know, did you see this? Like, when she comes home, it's cool because my wife and my son, they might be upstairs watching a movie on Netflix and me and her somewhere watching a game. You know, like that's what we do, you know. And so it came to a point to where things worked out. You know, it took some realization on my part and some maturity on her part. But I think when she went away to college, that helped out because she realized a lot of things I was saying and why I was acting the way I was acting. But I also realized at some point, I used to take it personal when she wanted, like when we were like, well, she could go train with Jody. He was my guy and I trusted him, but I took it as a slight. I'm your dad. You want to train with me? But it really was nothing personal. Like, I had to realize that's her space, man. Like, she needed that space. Like, and a lot of parents don't realize that's not your space. We had our space when we were in that stage. So, you know, we laugh now. She'll call every now and then, hey, Dad, can you come work me out? You know, I'll go to her. She's at High Point University. And I'll go work her out. You know, I'll go work out only when she asks. You know, and after every game, she'd call. Hey, what did you think? So it's a cool situation, but I did, you know, I was never like just, you know, all or nothing, you know, but it was to a point where I had to pull back. Like I had to realize, man, you got to pull back. Like if she don't want it, she doesn't want it. I can't make her want it. And I can't, like, I can't be over the top, you know, but I did tell her, if you're going to do it, you got to be all in. But a lot of parents that I know, they don't get that, and I want to help them. And I talk about that in certain parts of the book.
Yeah, that is hard to do. It is easy to say that you want to step back. It's easy to talk about it. It is really hard. It is really hard to do, to take that step back. If you're someone who loves the game and you mm-hmm. kind of have an idea mm-hmm. of you know what the potholes in the road are, you know what it takes in order to be able to get there. But sometimes you have to realize as a parent that it's not, the message is never going to get to your kid from you. It's got to get to your kid mm-hmm. from somebody else. But that is really, really, really hard. And even though I know it's the right thing to do, and I know that I've tried to do it as right as I possibly can, just with the things that you and I have been talking about, but there's still days where it's hard, where I see one of the kids sitting around and, hey, you want to go shoot? Not today. You know, there's part of me that says, well, mm-hmm. I don't care. We're going, because I'm not just going to watch you sit around. But then you think, if they don't really want to go, then it's no longer about them. It's about me. And again, that's not to say that you never push or encourage or do anything, but it's a fine line to walk, and it's hard, and it's very hard to do. So go ahead.
It's very challenging. No, it's just right, very challenging. You know?
It is. Let's jump into the book. So
okay,
tell me some of the things that, give me the general synopsis of, if I get this book, what am I going to learn as a parent, or what am I going to learn as a player? What are some of the key takeaways that you want people to get from the book?
Wow. So let's start from a player perspective.
Okay.
You know, we open up. Now, it's important that people understand this book is not for the player who wants to play rec league or upward basketball. This is for a player who really wants to play, like, you know, compete. Not necessarily be more concerned with what's the snack after the game. Like, this is a whole different book. This is for those players out there who really don't matter what level, but they want to be their best. So that's why the subtitle is How to Conquer the Road to Travel Basketball. So the very first chapter starting off is called Scholarships, Not Trophies. So we're not trying to play. It's good to win trophies when it comes, but players are going to know right off the bat, what's your ultimate goal? And you could be seventh grade. You don't have to think about a scholarship right now, but you have to think about competing. So it's okay if you play against a ninth grader or you play against a seventh grader and you lose. Like the kid I was telling you about earlier, they lost last night. But I was like, man, it's not a bad deal. You can learn from this. Like, so it's letting you know from day one, you have to compete at a high level. And you have to have the mentality to where setbacks or a loss or a bad game, it's okay. It's part of your growth process. But you're looking at the big picture. And that's why we say scholarships. It's the big picture. Don't get all overblown up by what happens today. What's the big picture about? Who cares if you're the number one ranked player as an eighth grader? That's not important. They're never really the best player at ninth, 10th, or 11th, like, unless you're LeBron. He was the best player from probably eighth grade.
Yep.
You know, but, you know, we all heard the story about Jordan. And I can say it, too. I remember becoming a junior thinking, man, that kid used to be good. What happened? You know, so I want parents and players to know from the jump. Players got to know, man, you got to be all in. And don't set your target on where you are right now. Just know you're going to be able to reach your goal and look at the big picture. So it's about the scholarship in the end. And it'll be nice to go and look and say you won. You know, when I went to the Blue Chip All-American camp, I still got the trophy. I won the Best Ball Handler Award at the camp. And that was great. That was a validation of my hard work. So trophies should be a validation of your hard work. You shouldn't hunt them. Your big thing should be about the big picture. So players should take away from this whole book, honestly, is that you have got to be your biggest competition is yourself. And then the next chapter two is about sacrifice. And I wanted people and I wanted players and parents to know it's sacrifice on every level. You know, me and my daughter were in the gym. It's funny. I look back. I don't know how I did it. We were in the gym every day at 5 o'clock in the morning. She would come knock on my door. I tell my wife, man, I hope she was oversleeping today. And we would get up and we would go and we'd be at the Y. We work out like 40-minute workout, shooting workout. Little ball handling, get out of there, get her to school, buy her Chick-fil-A on the way to school. And then after practice, she'd wait. We get up some shots. Like, it was a sacrifice. There were a lot of times she had to meet her friends at the mall or, you know, maybe the next day. Like, and she chose that. You know, she it was a sacrifice. And then it was a sacrifice for us as a family. Like, think about it. We could have a tournament and we might be up. We might be out $800 for a weekend.
Absolutely.
You know, everybody pays $20 Friday night pass, $20 Saturday, $20 Sunday. And if you bring in a husband, wife, and another person, you know, that's $200 for passes. Then you got to eat, you have hotels. So, like, we literally sacrificed. So I wanted people to understand what is the true commitment here. And then, you know, what you and I talked about, you know, training. We talked about training and then how to what's the balance between training and playing. It's one chapter called balance. And it's all about how do you balance? What should be the right mix of training and playing? You know, I know a lot of kids who train like a champ and get in the game and that defense moves. It's not a cone. They don't know how to react. And I know some kids who compete at a level 10, but then their skill set is deficient. So when it's in a tight situation, they don't have skills to make a play, but they compete like a dog. So we wanted players to understand the reality of that. And then what is it going to take for you to really stand out to a college coach? Like, I've never seen a college coach go look at a scorebook after a game. Never. And I've never seen many college coaches in a summer league stay to the end of a game at a showcase unless it's a really good two teams playing. It's a close game. They always go to another court. So what is it that you need to do away from the court to stand out? And most kids think, man, I played bad. I didn't score. There was a game. Mike, I'll tell you this game, man. My daughter had decommitted from West Virginia. And she played a game I think was her most perfect showcase game. She scored 6 points. And she literally cried after the game. And I was so thankful. One of the other coaches from a different team saw the game And right when I was getting ready to talk to her and console her, he said, can I talk to Courtney for a minute? I said, sure. And I overheard what he said. He was like, you played the best game I've seen a point guard play in years. She didn't value what college coaches valued. She didn't realize she ran the team, had no turnovers, and probably was responsible for 50 points, just getting in the lane, dropping passes, kicking out, and leadership. Like, if I'm a college coach, I would have said, I want you. But she didn't value that. And a lot of parents tell them, oh, my kid scored 30. Man, that's not even what a coach. They got people that could do that. You know, they got a kid who plays 6'7" on the wing that's going to shoot the lights out. Can you handle pressure? Like, I want them to know that. And then how to do it. Give them a template on how to do it. So I wanted them to be able to pick this book up from a player's perspective. And also the stories that we share, I want them to be able to say, man, I got to read that again. That was entertaining, but it was true. And make it something that they, like, it's like a fire. I wanted this to be a fire that when you put this book down or you stop listening to this on your AirPods or your digital book, or if you're riding somewhere and you listen to it, you're going to, like, your parent, no one will have to say anything to you again. Like, you're going to understand, man, I'm not giving enough, or, you know, I'm on the right track, but I got to step up a little bit more, or I need to do this specifically. Like, I wanted players to be able to say, man, this is the one book I really read that I can resonate with. And everyone who's read it right now, player, you know, coach, parents, I hold my breath because, you know, you hold people. But I'm going to tell you, I've just been humbled. I let my wife read the emails or text messages, and I've just been humbled. Like, the people at, like, high levels and parents and players and coaches are like, man, the world needs to read this book. Like, that's what I keep getting. So I'm just humbled by the response, and that, you know, it can play a role. And even these parents, to something I think I have to add is that we don't know what we don't know. And that's, we hear that phrase a lot, but I've literally almost had tears in my eyes with some parents that have moved their kids from certain teams. And I had a player that the father moved this player from my team. And this was one of the two players I had built the team around. It was a totally financed team. Nobody had to pay. We played a national schedule. We traveled around the whole country. This was a few years ago. And this dad just pulled the kid. And I called and never would respond. So we went on, had a phenomenal summer. Like, every game we played, literally 200 coaches. Like, it was prime time. And I got the team picture, and all of the players on that team have committed to Division I schools out of 11 players. I'm going to post it pretty soon. It was pretty special. I didn't realize that until I looked at it. I think the last one just committed to Old Dominion. And we're playing in a tournament, and the player whose father pulled him from the team, this was sad. I see the player and the parents watching us play. And we're like, literally, Gino is sitting, and all these coaches are watching us play. And the parents call and they try to get back on. But at that point, it was too late because I'd already committed. We were moving. And this kid, nothing's wrong with this, but this kid was being recruited. And we had this kid on the verge of getting ready to sign with a Division I school. And now the parents are paying for partial of this kid to go to college and play because of just a ill-advised decision the father made. The mother didn't want to do it. She called and talked to me. But the dad, you know, he went on his own agenda, and he wanted to coach his own kid. And they plan on a course where nobody was there, only parents. No coaches even went back to the corner of the facility where they were playing. So I want this book to be able to allow parents to see, if you do that, if you don't play with a really good team, your program director or coach, they better have some relationships to get the coaches to your court. Like, they need to understand the value of the decisions they make. And it's hard for them because it's not what they do. So I haven't read too many, you know, manuscripts that were really truthful and honest without making you read 500 pages to get to it. And we didn't want to do that.
Well, I think that, again, the education of people, players, parents, is so critical because, again, most of them only go through this experience once and they don't know where the different roads are, and they don't know which people they should trust. They don't know which programs they should be in. They don't know how to identify what makes a good AAU program, what makes a good AAU coach, what they should be looking for. And I know that this book is going to be able to help educate them on some of those processes that are so, so important. as you go down this road and try to figure out what it is that you're trying to do. So before we wrap things up, once again, Chris, will you please share where people can go to find out more about the book, where they can go to pre-order it? And then after you do that, let us know how people can connect with you on social media, and then I'll jump back in and wrap things up.
All right. So everyone out there listening today, right now, you can find us. You can find the book at imd1thebook.com. At imd1thebook.com, you can find the book there. You know, you can place your orders, and then it will go live on Amazon on Monday, April 5th, the day of the national championship. It will go, live on Amazon. And you can find us on Twitter. You can find us at I_AmD1. I_AmD1. IMD1 at I_AmD1 at Twitter. And I also have another account, Coach Chris, on Twitter as well. And they're both basically connected because that was my original account. So a lot of people follow me there at CO Chris D1. And then on the IG, on Instagram, again, you can follow us at IMD1TheBook on Instagram. IMD1TheBook on Instagram. You can follow us there.
Chris, we will put all of that in the show notes so that people can find you and find the book. And I just want to say to you, first of all, thanks for being willing to take some time out of your schedule to jump on with us. I think this has been a great episode, tremendously educational for anyone, coach, player, parent, who is listening to the episode. I think that they got a tremendous amount of value out of what you had to share with us tonight. And I'm sure that anyone who has a child who's going through the youth basketball system today, that their interest in the book has been piqued by what we've talked about. So I'm excited to be able to get my hands on it and check it out. And I'm sure, based on our conversation, that a lot of the things that I've been trying to share with people for years and years and years are things that you've been able to articulate very, very, very well in your book. And I'm looking forward to getting it. And hopefully there'll be a lot of people out there that will go out and pick up their copy and pre-order it. So again, Chris, can't thank you enough for joining us tonight. And to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
If you have an existing podcast or are looking to launch your own pod but aren't sure where to start, the team at My Podcast Manager can help. Our podcast team works behind the scenes so you can do what you do best. We'll help you launch your podcast, make it sound great, and free up your time for the more enjoyable parts of podcasting. If you're ready to put your podcast editing, production, and promotion on autopilot with a trusted team of podcasting professionals, visit mypodcastmanager.com to get started.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.